Come back with me to July of 1988, 20 years ago this month. Three films that would change history were all released within weeks of each other. License to Drive, Short Circuit 2, and Cocktail. Could this July possibly equal the July of two decades ago? Daniel Holloway of Us Weekly joins us now to talk about this weekend's contributions to movie history. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Mike.
I believe it was License to Drive that starred Heather Graham as a character named Mercedes. Am I getting that right?
Groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking role.
But back then, she was only a pretty face who couldn't act much.
And look at her now.
Mm-hmm.
She's
She's still pretty. Let's start this week with Hellboy 2. Guillermo del Toro directs. He made Pan's Labyrinth, which is artsy, but enough people saw it. It got not even an Oscar nomination for, you know, best foreign film, but other Oscar nominations. Very well-received movie. And then, though, Ang Lee made The Hulk, so he was like an artsy director who tried a superhero movie. How's Guillermo del Toro do with Hellboy?
Well, better than Ang Lee. At least Hellboy doesn't spend a lot of time, you know, looking like one of the cowboys in Brokeback Mountain, just ponderous and brow furrowed. It would be interesting for about 90 seconds.
Yeah.
This is a sequel to the 94 film that Del Toro did, and they're adapted from comics by Mike Mignola. It's okay. It's an okay film. It is not as good as Pan's Labyrinth, which wasn't necessarily the best foreign language. I don't think it deserved a best foreign language film nomination last year.
Really?
It was a good movie. It wasn't a great movie. I think people had a tendency to overpraise it a little bit. Hellboy 2 is an average movie in a summer where, you know, we have a lot of comic book heroes running around, and you probably got to be a little bit better than average to get noticed.
Right, because maybe, you know, you reviewed The Hulk as essentially an average movie.
Yeah.
I think we both liked Iron Man.
Yep.
I didn't care for Hellboy 1. It wasn't terrible. It was, first of all, it's a comic book hero. If someone is listening to this and they're like, oh, I don't really know comic books, maybe Hellboy's a big character. He's not.
No.
He's semi-obscure.
Yeah.
And so I guess you could say that they were only trying to improve on mediocrity. How does it compare to Hellboy 1?
I would say it's maybe like a half step down things that seemed new in Hellboy 1.
Right, just watching the big guy in red.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, the highlight in this film is the same as the highlight in the last film was, which is Ron Perlman, who people might remember from the show Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And he's entertaining to watch as Red, but as they call him in the film. He carries around a big gun. He chews on a cigar.
Baby Ruth's.
Baby Ruth's.
Yeah.
And
he has such a weird career, Ron Perlman. His physicality just only makes him essentially play monsters.
Yeah. Can you ever think of seeing him in anything where he wasn't wearing a ton of makeup?
I believe he played Cosette in Les Mis on Broadway. No, I'm getting that wrong. That was 80s pop icon Debbie Gibson.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so close.
Hey, let's hear a scene from Hellboy 2. The conversation you're about to hear, which is an investigation of a crime scene, occurs over walkie-talkies.
Whatever they called us for is over. We had over 70 guests reported. We have no survivors, no bodies.
Same story here, babe.
Don't call me babe.
Hey, I said. Hey.
Prop channel.
Hey, I think Liz is still mad at me.
Still the same channel.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know that we've ever seen that gag before. Actually, this isn't call waiting. I'm the same person you were talking to. Is that Selma Blair he was talking
that
to?
That is Selma Blair who he has a relationship with, and she's just about the only character in the movie who isn't in heavy makeup, so it's a little
Jeffrey
weird.
Tambor? What about him?
Jeffrey Tambor also not in heavy makeup. You're right. I stand corrected. And Tambor underutilized in this film. Hilarious and just, you know, makes you excited about the prospect.
Are there at least some, if you're a fan of at least set dressing and so forth, are there some Guillermo del Toro touches alone, you know, visually that make it not worth the price of admission, but at least something to look at?
Yeah, I mean, Del Toro makes a movie that is very much like the comic book it's adapted from. Mike Mignola is a really incredible artist. He's maybe a D-plus writer. and Del Toro adapted this, and I think Del Toro is visually amazing and maybe a straight C writer. There's some really interesting visual stuff going on, especially some steampunk gadgetry that you see that's really, you know, just sexy looking and cool and fun to watch, you know, the little parts move around and stuff. And, you know, he's going to be directing the upcoming Hobbit films. And this is kind of, you know, if you're the type of person who's going to get really excited about those, this is kind of a sneak peek at what that
could
look like.
Okay, so I guess this is a placeholder. It keeps his, you know, muscles from atrophying before the Hobbit movies. Let's now journey to the center of the Earth. The movie is in 3D, normally not a good sign. They don't say, Citizen Kane, not such a strong movie. Let's make it in 3D. Also starring Brendan Fraser. Gonna say it again, not such a good sign. I have many thoughts on Brendan Fraser. I like Brendan Fraser. He's always in what used to be called serial movies or B movies. And my theory is he, again, physically, he's 6'3". Most stars of today are small. So most other really good actors don't want to work with him because he dwarves them. So he has to be in movies alone. And kind of he's always these throwbacks to these 50s characters. I guess The Mummy took place in the 30s. Where does Journey to the Center of the Earth, even though it was written by Jules Verne in the, you know, 1800s, what time period does it take place in?
I mean, it takes place in the here and now, but it basically takes place out of time because most of the film, except for, you know, the frame at the beginning and the end, are, you know, kind of, they're out of context of any type of reality.
Well, how's this movie?
The movie is okay. It's a kids' movie. It's in 3D. I saw it with a room full of kids, and they seemed to react well to it. Yeah, Fraser is a likable screen presence. He's not the best actor. He's not the best looking guy. But he is likable. He's the type of guy who it seems like if you knew him and you broke down on the side of the road, he would come pick you up.
He is a big lug. And if you look at his career, I mean, he first got noticed in Encino Man, where he played someone from prehistory. Then he was in School Ties, which took place in the 50s, and Quiet American, and The Mummy, this, you know, the Alan Quatermain movies. He was in George of the Jungle and Dudley Do-Right, which are cartoons, so he's kind of cartoonish, but also cartoons from 30 and 40 years ago. He just doesn't work well, or they won't cast him in modern movies.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's, and what's the, there was the film with Alicia Silverstone where the,
yeah, he was a guy who still thought it was the 50s.
Who still thought it was the 50s, yeah. I can't remember what the name of that film
I'll look, but then he was also in Gods and, he was in Gods and Monsters. Which
yeah, he is, you know, it's an interesting point. He is kind of a throwback guy. I don't know, though, that, you know, how interesting is it when the throwback movies that he's doing aren't themselves very interesting?
Well, we do have a quote from Journey to the Center of the Earth, and before we play it, we have to say that this audio is in 3D. Let's listen.
Tell me that's not what I think it is.
Muscovite.
What's Muscovite?
Muscovite is a very thin type of rock formation.
How thin?
Well, so thin that the slightest change in weight and pressure can cause it to shatter. And we're standing on a lot of it.
Okay, so we need to walk back exactly the way we came from. Very, very calmly, okay?
Try like me. Heel toe. Doing good.
That's it. It's great.
Really careful.
Keep going.
It's actually thicker than I thought.
Just waiting for that.
Yeah,
the time he says
people are only calm in a 3D movie for one reason. To set up the... Ah! So they talk about Muscovite there. That's someone from Moscow. What's the point?
Muscovite, as explained by Brendan Fraser, scientist, is a rock that I guess is really thin. I'm assuming the internet is saying no.
The internet just told me that the Brendan Fraser movie we're trying to think of was Blast from the Past.
Ah, Blast from the Past. Me. Christopher Walken was in
mm-hmm,
the movie.
As Brendan Fraser's dad. Yeah. Great casting. That looks so much alike. and somehow there's a Tyrannosaurus Rex in the center of the Earth.
There is a Tyrannosaurus Rex and then some other things that are actually from the book. I don't believe the Tyrannosaurus Rex is, and it's just the one. It's actually, the effects in this movie are a little disappointing. I mean, the 3D stuff is fine. The 3D stuff is cool, but it seems that they focused on that so much that, for instance, you know, when you have a dinosaur, it's not so great to have them running around an open desert. It looks like you spent all your animation money on the dinosaur and had no money for backdrops.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's...
Put them in like a 19th century parlor.
Yeah. Let them wear a top hat and a monocle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Mm-hmm. I'd see that movie. Another movie that I was excited to see, just based on the premise, was August. And the August refers to the titular month, if you will. August of 2001. So it's right before September 2001, when the world changed. But it's also a business movie about a time when the internet was going gangbusters. Let's listen in. Things are going bad for the company.
So where does that put us?
The NASDAQ was down 87 points at opening, and we're doing worse. Or below dollar.
So what are our options?
Cutbacks, layoffs, but then there's the whole perception thing. The rumors, the sniping, the downward spiral could sink us.
So we're probably looking at another round of financing.
We got an offer from Barton Ogilvy.
What's the catch?
Second round financing isn't that easy.
They'll pay market value, but they're going to want a big piece. This is no time to be proud, Tom.
No, that's not the play. That's not the way we're going to do it. I'll cash flow the company myself if I have to.
You're in no position to do that. You're leveraged to the hilt.
I'll find the money.
You're broke, Tom.
Wow. Who's Tom? Who's talking? What the heck was going on?
It's MySpace Tom. It's not actually MySpace Tom.
Oh.
It's Josh Hartnett, and he plays Tom. He's the CEO and public face of a tech startup called Landshark, who...
That's a good name.
Yeah. And either cleverly or annoyingly, you never know. You never find out throughout the entire movie what exactly it is that Landshark does.
That's a cool MacGuffin.
Some sort of web application.
Okay. I'm on board so far. I like the time setting. I like the thing they're talking about. Josh Hartnett, don't love, but, you know, maybe with a good script he could do something. Does he? What goes on here?
You know, it's not Glengarry Glen Ross, and it should be. Hartnett is not – when I first saw this movie, I thought the script was the problem. I saw this movie a few months ago, and then I rewatched it this week, and I realized that the script is not the problem. There are two problems. One is Hartnett. He's not a very interesting actor. Tell me – you know, off the top of your head, one movie that you've enjoyed him in.
Yeah, no, I liked, Black Hawk Down. But he had such a small role in a huge ensemble cast.
Yeah.
Otherwise, when he's asked to carry a movie, you're right. He can't.
And here, what he's trying to do, he's trying to play Tom Cruise in Magnolia or a darker version of Tom Cruise in Jerry Maguire. Interestingly enough, he also just signed on to do an adaptation of Rain Man in London's West End.
Really?
Yeah.
Straight play?
Mm-hmm.
Not a musical, don't tell
me. No.
Yeah.
And he's going to play the Cruise part. So there's something very specific that they're going for here. You know, they're basically like a week away, the company is, from going kaput. And he's trying to put up the face of, you know, we're still the aggressive, like, in-your-face tech people. And it should work, and it could work with a different actor, and it could work if they just... It's interesting watching the character try to sell. It's not interesting watching the director try to sell you on how sexy this world of, you know, internet startup techie people who go around to swank bars and insult each other and hook up with hot women.
Yeah, that's familiar. It's like anyone who will see this movie is old enough to remember that, so you probably don't need too much underlining. And let me give you a quote of you, which is a great line. Why expend so much effort defining a pre-9/11 world if not to comment on a post-9/11 world? That's a good point. They don't? There's no connection?
There's, you know, there are a lot of parallels drawn to the point that they frequent, and I know this only because I used to work in the neighborhood, that they frequent a nudie bar that is literally blocks away from the World Trade Center site.
Hmm.
There's a lot of this thing looms over the movie the entire time. And it doesn't need to. I understand the need to place it to place it 7 or 8 years ago, so that you have the bursting of the tech bubble as a backdrop. But there are constant TV footage of George W. Bush. Then he'll change the channel, and there will be a man on fire.
Yeah.
It constantly looms over this thing to no end, and it becomes a little frustrating and a little annoying after a while. And once the movie is over and you realize that it was kind of pointless, you feel a little pissed off.
A little used.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for putting me through, or at least making me contemplate that emotionally for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It's like, you know, there are certain scenes that you could do in drama that you got to be very careful with. You know, that's one of them. You don't show, like, you don't aim a gun at the audience. Mm-hmm. Another convention of cinema and drama. You, sir, are an unconventional man, but I want to thank you for your participation.
Pleasure.
Our movie guy's name is Daniel Holloway. He writes for us and reviews movies for us. If you can figure that out, you win. Thanks a lot, Daniel.
Thank you.
And that is it for this hour of the BPP. We are always online at npr.org/Brian Park. I am Mike Pesca. This is the Brian Park Project from NPR News.